Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast, an intelligent, imaginative, hospitable exploration of ideas that matter in contemporary life. And now, here's your host, Dick Staub.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another encore presentation of The Dick Staub Show, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers about their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with George Smoot, author of the book Wrinkles in Time. Obviously, we are just scratching the surface of the theory. Now, is it proper to call it a theory at this point? I mean, what is the relationship between theory and something that you say is fairly well proved at this point?
Well, theory, I mean, our artists think, we never think of anything as proved in science because you may discover something new.
If you're an honest scientist with integrity.
You get a lot of confidence in a theory because observations and the whole network, the way it fits to the rest of physics, get so strong. Usually we start with ideas and concepts and then paradigms and then models and then theories. So theories are the ones that range from speculative to being really reassured. And we are moving in the Big Bang, it's definitely a theory. It's moved from a model to sort of a theory standpoint. The inflationary idea, the first burst of the Big Bang, that's moving from the model stage to the theory stage now.
And it is provocative. I remember I was sitting at the University Presbyterian Church in Cal Berkeley when Earl Palmer, who was the pastor there, stood up and started, he got off on this whole tangent about Big Bang theory and why it was so significant scientifically and why he felt that it fit his own theology. And in one of the interesting comments that was criticisms that was made of you, which I thought was really rather unfair, actually, was by a theologian who said about your comment about the face of God, we see here an age-old pattern on the part of scientists to make incompetent statements about philosophy and religion, which the first thing that leaps to my mind, being a seminary graduate, is how many times have I heard theologians making incompetent statements about science? And you and I were talking earlier, there is this great gulf that exists between theology and science. One of the frustrating things I have on this show, if I want to have a discussion about integrating your theology with science, and I go out to someone who is theologically correct within the acceptable, they are never scientists, or seldom are they scientists. I'm not saying that there aren't scientists who have a robust faith, but I'm saying the people that are out there advocating theologies that they say really fit science aren't scientists. Meanwhile, over here you've got scientists who are working often in a vacuum theologically. Of course, you could say that all theology is done in a vacuum. But you know, what can we do to see more dialogue, or does there need to be more dialogue? You say that there's this intersection of philosophy, theology, and science.
I think there will be more dialogue naturally. The first thing is to be less competitive. One thing we see is religions are becoming more accepting of science, whereas science hasn't become more accepting of religion yet. I mean, the Catholic Church maintains its own observatory and professional astronomers to advise them on that. And that certainly wasn't true in the 1600s. And but religion has been around, you know, the Western religion has been around 2,000 years. Science has really only been around seriously for the last 400 years. It's very young, and most science has been done in the last 100 years. So you have to give it a chance to mature some.
But does not have to be a gap between scientific inquiry and theological inquiry. I mean, I was saying earlier, if we are committed to truth wherever it leads us, then whether you're a theologian or a scientist, you ought to be willing to accept that truth when it's delivered, given the fact that it is as you said, in science, it's a theory, something new evidence could come that would change your perception of truth.
I think that's true. We have to understand that there's really different an approach between religion and science. Science is out to observe the physical world and make up rules about how the physical world is going on, whereas religion is taking spiritual things on faith and explaining how your spirituality and your morality work out. And so there's a very different basic approach, but I really do think there's something missing in people's lives that they don't have an integrated world picture that includes philosophy and religion and science, as well as your ordinary life.
What kind of letters did you get from religious people when you made the comments that you did about God?
Well, after the first two or three weeks, about a third of my mail was religious oriented. And a lot of the people said, you didn't need to have to do that experiment. It's already explained in the Bible. And other people wrote in and says, I'm glad you did this experiment. You proved that it's right and it fits in with the Bible and it sure confirms everything we know. And there were lots of smattering of other things, or people sending me their own theological, you know, cosmological theories or books that already had this in that are interpreting the Bible. And also from Eastern religions too. But the thing that I find most poignant was I did get some calls and some letters from people who obviously had their own faith tested, and they were looking for something to bolster it rather than accepting their religion and accepting their faith directly based on what was good for them and what felt right for them. They were looking for some experts on the outside to come and tell them, yes, this is right, you can believe in it. And I try and shy away from that and not tell people about their religion. And it's really disturbing to see people so tortured over years and years to learn that.
The last paragraph of the book, the religious concept of creation flows from a sense of wonder at the existence of the universe and our place in it. The scientific concept of creation encompasses no less a sense of wonder. We are awed by the ultimate simplicity and power of the creativity of physical nature and by its beauty on all scales. Why did you end the book with that paragraph?
Why questions are really difficult. I know it seemed a fitting conclusion, and it seemed how I felt at the time. You know, when you're writing a summing up chapter that says, here's what we discovered about the universe, and it's amazing how many things fit together, that's what the book does, is tells how many things fit together. It is quite impressive how neatly everything interlocks and everything. And some people will see that as evidence for a designer.
Sure.
Other people will say that as evidence for there's only one, you know, set of physical laws that are necessary. And somehow it just felt right to me to say it that way.
But you also make the comment somewhere in the book that anybody that really understands the nature of cosmology, the nature of the universe, will understand how insignificant man is in it.
Yes. I mean, I gave you the example of what we can see, which is probably a small part of the universe, that there are 100 billion galaxies and 100 billion stars on it. So we're just one insignificant star in a galaxy with 100 billion stars in it. We're not even in the center. We're out on the edge of that. And that galaxy is insignificant on the scale of things. We're only in a sort of a mediocre group of galaxies compared to some of the splendid groups you see out there. So in that sense, man is really insignificant on the scale of the universe. On the other hand, I'm really impressed that we have been able to, in a relatively short time, very limited cosmological time, and we only live in almost a single point in space and time, we've been able to try and comprehend the universe as a whole, and it looks to me like we've made tremendous progress and seen the order and everything.
Interestingly enough, the sense of insignificance is part of what has driven people towards trying to understand if there is a God and how that brings meaning to their life. Even the earthquake in Los Angeles, we heard people talking about the ravages of nature, and then in the same breath saying it's by the grace of God that I'm alive. There is this kind of intertwined relationship between the more we understand about the immensity of the universe and the complexity of cosmology, the more we get ourselves in perspective. And sometimes theology fills a gap there, I guess.
Right. I mean, everyone has to find a worldview that they're comfortable with, but it ought to be consistent with the physical world you live in. Otherwise, you'll stand in the middle of the street and a truck will run over you or something.
Exactly.
You want to have the right view so that you know how to behave in the world as it really is, but you also have to be comfortable in it. And I take comfort in the fact, even though we're just an insignificant speck compared to everything we can see, it's not a hostile universe in the sense there are not these horrible monsters out there trying to eat us up, you know, either animated or not animated. And they're not black holes whizzing past and eating the Earth every few minutes or something like that. The world is actually pretty benign. If you live in a city, you think of a jungle as being a very dangerous place. People live in a jungle, think of a city as a very dangerous place. People learn to live and adapt. Actually, life is pretty benign. But we are, as humans, even though there are billions of us, we're still infinite speck, and we really have to sort of learn to get along with each other and be with our family.
Hmm. this is a fascinating book, and what, again, has been said about this book, which is true, is that if you really want to understand the state of cosmology, this book will help you understand it. It's explained in terms that are understandable by mere mortals, and will get you a grasp of where contemporary research is taking us. And for those of you that are interested in theology, it's got some rather provocative comments about that in the book as well that will give you a lot to think about. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
This concludes our conversation with Dr. George Smoot. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's KINDLINGS. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.